Welcome to EdTech Weekly. I'm your host, Ricky Zager, and joining me as always is Matt Harrison. Matt, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I'm excited because we did get our first listener email. I say that, but it was really our friend Meredith. So I didn't offer her the Google Play card. Should I have done that?
Well, she sounds like an Apple person, so it may be stop trying to give away my gift card, man.
Yeah, maybe I'm just going to have to give it to you. I don't know. She did, however, mention that she thought we should have a female voice on the show. I think she was trying to get on board this train because she sees it's moving quickly to stardom. No comments to that?
I think she should be on any time that she wants to be.
I agree. And
I welcome Meredith.
You're such a welcoming guy. All right, well, Matt, we've got an extra tech news story this week, so we're not going to have a tip of the week, so we're just going to get right to the tech news of the week. We'll start with an interesting report from Business Insider that says Mark Zuckerberg would like you to let your kids play video games. If he could tell wives to let their husbands play video games, I think you and I would probably be more happy.
Yes, that'd be very nice.
That would be nice. Well, I have a boy who's almost two, and I've been struggling with this. You know, when do you play video games? Are video games okay? Should we encourage kids to play video games, Matt?
Short answer is I don't think you really need to encourage kids to play video games because I think they're going to play video games regardless. I think the difficulty comes when we start talking about the intrinsic value of certain types of video games. Right now, we have apps that gamify everything, so we give up more data and stuff like that. This coming from Facebook, I think it's great to have an industry leader talking about the importance of video games and how maybe that had influenced parts of his life. But I wonder when Facebook's going to announce their new game division so that they gamify finding the color and then you letting everybody know about your, you know, favorite types of sorbet.
So that they can use that and sell it, right? Yeah, it's, to me, you know, this is really, it's sort of self-serving, right? I mean, it's kind of like the Microsoft ads. It's kind of a way to get more people to be interested in doing things that, you know, may help Facebook or other tech companies in the future. But I mean, really what he's kind of saying in there is that playing video games inspired him to learn how to make video games. And that may be true of some gamers, but some of the gamers that I've encountered online, and I know you have as well, I don't see them actually spending the time to do that. They're too busy trolling and making crazy comments on there. And it's kind of, video game is more of a lifestyle for them than a conduit for them to, you know, create a video game.
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, when I watched people play Duck Hunt, I was less interested in hitting the duck every single time as I was figuring out how it actually worked. The light gun worked against CRT television. That was more interesting to me than the actual game.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what you say there is probably kind of echoing what Mark is saying here, and that's some people play video games are going to see that in a different way. You know, adults a lot of times and people of a different generation see video games as a waste of time, but somebody might see it like you saw Duck Hunt and might say, hey, how does that work? How can I figure this out? And again, a lot of things we talked about in the past few weeks are very similar. You put this type of technology or things in the hands of kids, and then they look at it a different way. And maybe they solve a problem, or maybe they figure out a new way to do things. Certainly, I don't think Mark is saying let your kids be locked up and play video games for 48 hours straight, as happens a lot of times with games like Call of Duty and all that. But I think at the end of the day, we want to introduce our students to as many different forms of technology and also anything that could spur an interest in possibly developing games or trying out new things or looking at it from a different perspective. So let's get to our next story. We have CNET, who's reporting that a humanoid robot named Milo, who's helping autistic children develop social skills. Does a robot teaching social skills to anyone make sense, Matt?
Yes. I think that there are lots of humans who are trying to teach social skills are terrible at it. So why not give a robot the ability to try to do the same thing?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of things are turning to the way of a computer sort of being able to do tasks better. You know, in these certain situations, and in this particular one, they're talking about, you know, he's, I guess, sort of a therapy robot in some ways, and they're noticing a high level of engagement with kids, about 87%, with Milo, and they only get about 3% with a living therapist. So it seems that whatever strikes the core with autism here has really enabled them to, you know, have that engagement with a robot. And so maybe their difficulty in dealing socially with a human being kind of prohibits them from actually getting some good therapy. And so in this situation, it seems like it might be a good scenario. I wonder, is this the beginning of the end for all the therapists in the world?
I think absolutely not. I think what's going to end up happening is we're going to be using this as a tool that engages more and more kids at an earlier age that allows more functionality in their own lives. I don't think it does away with therapists. I think it creates a larger community from multiple different facets and coming from multiple different backgrounds to help tackle a large issue.
Yeah, I think if you couple this technology with a therapist who can maybe help sort of direct the way that the therapy goes using the computer or using Milo, I think you're looking at something there that might actually work. And I mean, anytime you see technology doing something good for a problem in society, which autism has certainly become a growing issue in the past 10 years, especially, I think. So it's pretty cool. And the fact that technology is able to help students or help children with autism and probably adults as well is a pretty awesome thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, our next story. TechCrunch is reporting that MathCrunch, I don't think they're run by the same company, even though they have Crunch as a last name, raised $3.5 million in funding to help develop an app that will match math tutors with those who need them instantly. Maybe if I had this app, I wouldn't have had to take college statistics multiple times. That's a whole nother story, but it certainly seems like the time to be an EdTech startup, Matt.
Oh, absolutely. I think we should get in on that. I don't know if there's a medium you can think of where we could probably help people match the skills that they're looking for with the programs and solutions that are out there.
I mean, are you saying we should come up with like a podcasting for EdTech app?
I don't think podcasting is going to work. I think video is probably the way to go.
Oh, okay. Well, listen.
I have a bunch of beta tapes.
Betamax tapes?
I think what we can do is we can create videos and then we send them to people. It's the most efficient way.
Yeah, you know, I think you're onto some good stuff there. In terms of this particular story, I feel like if I did this when I was a student, I would have gotten matched with the one guy who's out there just working the system to make some extra cash. I mean, it does seem like they have a good system, at least at face value, to make sure that they have knowledgeable tutors and all that. Do you think that you would like to do this if either you were a math student or a teacher? I mean, would this be something you'd be interested in partaking in?
Oh, no, not at all. I tutored in college and I'll never do it again. I'm glad to help. I'm on couple different Reddit communities where I help people with certain things. I don't mind doing that. But something like this, I think I would end up with the kid who just wants more and more and more and help and then tells me I'm a jerk.
Well, maybe Milo could help you out with that. It sounds like maybe there's some social issues here with your tutoring.
No, it's the reviews.
It's just the reviews. So what we always get to when we talk about technology, almost at every level, but in education as well, is are teachers in a position to be scared here that they're going to be replaced or diminished by companies like these making these type of apps?
No. I mean, to me, it's just a continuation or someone who has found a way to try to monetize the communities that already exist there. I mean, you can do this with Craigslist. You can go on Reddit. They have subreddits. There are Facebook help groups. There's a ton of these different things out there, and all they're doing is just collectively trying to find people who want to get involved on the ground level of something like this and then advertising out to students. I don't think it diminishes from teachers or anything like that. I think if you're a teacher and you're worried about being diminished by it, I think that's maybe a bigger problem, but I don't know.
I think if you're doing your job and you're a good teacher, I don't think anything on the technology sector is gonna do anything to take you away. I mean, if you have skills that help students learn and you can develop relationships with these kids and kind of make a difference in their lives, I don't think that skill is going to go away because of technology. Certainly not. But, you know, as in with Milo, you know, maybe you have more of a complementary role in certain areas and maybe you're the lead role in some other areas. But in a sense, that might make the job easier for teachers. You know, if they have somebody who can be more specifically dialed into tutoring some students, I, you know, a lot of teachers, friends of mine that were math teachers, you know, it's cumbersome trying to get some of the students who have difficulties always to be on the same page as the rest of the class. And I just see this as a tool that's going to help those kids kind of keep up and be able to actually succeed.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, it sounds a little bit, a lot like being an adjunct professor. You know, I was an adjunct English lit professor for an 1101 class, and all the kids who had like questions about certain little things always came to me, and you know, that's all it really ever was.
Yeah, kind of saved the big dog from having those little issues. Yeah. Yes. I mean, that's a good way to look at it. All right, our next story, Matt, Engadget reports about a game called No Pineapple Left Behind. Yes, in this game, Matt, you can be a school administrator and find a way to get your pineapples to perform well enough on standardized tests that you can increase your school funding. I mean, I do have to give it to Seth Alter here, who created this game. There's a heavy dose of humor infused in this game, but there are some serious issues to be considered here as well, with children being sort of looked at as only statistics. It's an interesting way for technology to give a different perspective of an issue that I think a lot of educators are very frustrated with here.
I think it's frustrating for anybody who has heard about it. It's a crappy situation, and I think that this game does a really great job of, you know, as they say, in a phrase I'm not a big fan of, but tongue-in-cheek about the whole thing, but it has a lot of serious connotations that come along with it. The important thing really is looking at this game for what it is, and it's just making fun of a system which needs to kind of laugh at itself to maybe learn how not to be such a joke.
Yeah, you know, I think anybody who's in education has been in a situation, whether it's a meeting or somewhere in their school or in their district, has been in a situation where they get that sense that children are being viewed as statistics. Not everybody, not everywhere, but there are parts certainly of the way that this system's set up that do that. And, you know, the pineapple thing is sort of a, I think it's a joke about a question that was on one of the standardized tests, I think in New York, that it gave this pineapple sort of humanistic characteristics and, you know, anthropomorphized them and basically said, you know, what would this pineapple be feeling? I mean, and a lot of the kids, it really threw off. So that's sort of his way of poking fun at that as well. But I guess at the end of the day, anything that reminds us in education that each student, each kid is different and has a different set of circumstances and that they can't all be treated the same way, even though our system is designed that way, is a good, at least, conversation to have.
Yeah.
And now, Matt, we get to the most fun story and the last story of the day here. CNET reports about a $9 computer, $9, under $10 here, that is taking Kickstarter by storm. It packs a lot of punch for $9, Matt, including Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, it's got a video out, and it comes with some preloaded apps like Scratch to help teach programming. Last week we had a story about desktops for schools. Are we at the point now where we should just be throwing $9 at a computer like this and just riding it for all it's worth?
No, I don't think so. I think it's an amazing, amazing piece of hardware that has a lot of potential. But I think that this is a good solution for a tech group or tech-minded students that want to form their own after-school program where they want to learn to do something like this. But for the everyday student, a $9 computer is $9 that's going to end up on the ground with a broken node somewhere.
Yeah, you're right. I could see a lot of these being bent and not being in working condition. But I do like your idea of having it as a, you know, a class-based or maybe a after-school program-based situation where, you know, I think this is kind of that cool, nerdy tech factor with it that would, you know, the same sort of way when you watch Duck Hunt and you were interested in how that worked. This is going to get some kids to be like, okay, wait a minute. How does this little thing do that? How, you know, what is this piece and what does that mean and how can we alter it? You know, and especially being tied in with Scratch, which is a pretty good visual way of learning programming for students. I really like this $9 computer and I really like your idea there of doing it sort of as a club or something like that. One of the other cool factors, this thing, it has what's called the pocket chip, and that basically to me, it looked like a Game Boy. It's got a screen, a battery, a keyboard. I mean, tech nerd factor way up on that, right? I mean, it'd be kind of cool to have one of those, don't you think?
Yeah, no, It basically rings all the little bells that are needed for some cool little nerd tech thing to play with and create something pretty awesome. I mean, you really can't beat a cheap piece of hardware like this that has a lot of processing power. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, taking an old laptop from 2010 and bringing it back to life and running Ubuntu on it, I mean, it achieves a lot of these same things. And cheap technology where we're using it to create something new is the best and coolest thing out there.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, there is a way that this could work for, you know, some of our lower income students as well. I know that there's a, like you said, the way that this is set up, it's probably very easily breakable. And sometimes when something is valued that low, people treat it like that as well. So there'd have to be some education there and ways to treat it. But it's exciting to see the type of accessibility that this could lead to, you know, something that may be a little more sturdy, a little more durable, but much cheaper. And we could bring a lot of people that normally wouldn't have this experience and let them have it. So it's pretty exciting.
Well, and if you have a 3D printer, you can print cases for the Raspberry Pi with it. I mean, there are ways around it. There are people who are designing things all the time that protect it. I mean, I know with Raspberry Pi, you can use it for so many different things. Some people use it for measuring, you know, waterfall and then turning on, you know, sprinklers if they need to water their garden or something like that. You need to have a durable case for that. So something like this is really going to bring apart secondary marketplaces that come together where you need to start creating these products to help protect it. So,
yeah. And I like your take on that as well, because, you know, this is a good way to build sort of school community. If you have a makerspace and if you're lucky enough to have a 3D printer, you get a few of these and then you have people on a project, like have a contest who can come up with the best case design for this chip and this computer. I mean, it could be a really collaborative effort that could pull some design students, some art students into something that, you know, maybe they're not that techy or that into it, but maybe who could create the most useful case or who could create the most interesting or most artistic. I mean, this is a whole school kind of a thing. And it, besides the 3D printer, which obviously would be expensive, I mean, $9 for these things and sort of a need case, you know, a need scenario where you can build these cases. I mean, what you just said there, you know, if somebody at a school has the opportunity with a 3D printer, just get a couple of these and play with them and see how far you can take that.
Oh, use it in other classes. Go to wood shop and, you know, build a case out of wood, make something super awesome. I mean, there's so many different avenues you can take with it. I mean, I don't know. I just think something like this is really, really cool, hip and or jiggy with it.
Oh, yeah. Well, clearly. I mean, the terminology alone is, yes, it shows that how with it you are.
Now, well, I found it and I'm following it.
And so you are with it.
Yes.
I like it, Matt. I love it. So here's the thing. Technology at this point, you know, can open doors, whether it's through, like we talked about with gaming today, or whether it's this cheap little computer that you can get. Just a student might look at that and go, whoa, how does that work? How can I figure this out? And I think a lot of times with technology, that's the part that we miss as educators. We think, well, how would I use this in the classroom? Maybe that's not the issue here. Maybe the issue is let it be introduced to the kids and figure out how they would use it and what they would do to it and let them run with it. I mean, I could see that project working out awesome, like you talked about with Woodshop or with a makerspace or whatever you have, coming together to sort of create these little things for the school and build community and also, you know, get people interested in things maybe they didn't know they were interested in. All right, well, that's it for EdTech Weekly. Matt, they can follow me on Twitter at 4TechTeachers, the number 4TechTeachers, and we are still waiting for a legitimate first emailer for our show at edtechweekly@gmail.com. Can you implore the people that we want them to communicate with us, Matt? Can you say anything that would get them to email us?
Yes, but first I'm going to start off and talk about how Meredith is legitimate, a legitimate listener who has taken the time to message us.
And she's probably not even going to listen to this episode, so it was all wasted. But
I've wasted nothing.
Meredith, if you're listening again next week, maybe we can have you come on the show. All right? Well, thanks, Matt, for joining me again. I hope you have a great week. We'll be back with the EdTech News of the Week.
Groovy.